This is the Bat Pod.
Grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate, it's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod, Episode 8. My name is Bill Beer, and joining me as always, Joey Galvez.
Hey, how's it going, Bill?
Good, it's going real good tonight. And tonight we are back for the new year. We've had a few delays due to illness and things beyond our control, but we're finally back. And tonight we're going to discuss Batman number 62, Batman Who Laughs number 1, and Detective Comics 996. We're going to have topic of the week, a little character spotlight, and Stump the co-host. So are you ready?
I'm ready, man. I'm pretty excited. I'm good. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Okay, let's get on to the books.
The Bat Pod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
We are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
Our first book tonight is Batman number 62. Your writer is Tom King. Your art and cover is Mitch Gerards. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Variant cover, Frank Miller and Alex Sinclair. Associate editor, Brittany Holzer. Editor, Jamie S. Rich. And in this issue, Batman wakes up in a dazed state to find himself captured and hanging upside down in a slaughterhouse by none other than Professor Pig. After freeing himself, getting stabbed, we discover it was all a dream. Or was it?
Oh, man. Oh, what was it?
What was it is the question.
Yeah, oh, man. If you're asking me, I have no idea. I was reading this one, and the only thing that stuck out to me was the artwork. The artwork was awesome. I loved how some points were blurry, some points were very vivid, and it was pretty cool. And I love, like, there's puddles of blood everywhere. That was kind of cool. But when I read this last page, it really frustrated me. I was like, are you kidding me?
Well, yes, the artwork was fantastic. Love the artwork. The book is worth it just for the artwork. Oh, yeah. Are you a little confused?
Are you a little dazed? I'm extremely dazed and confused, man. This is, oh my gosh, I can't tell you how bad this book left me.
I don't know what, to be honest, I don't know what this book was trying to convey. I really think he wanted you dazed and confused, yeah. Like Batman is in the story.
Right.
You know, you're as confused about what's going on as he is. And I still question to a point.
Yeah,
did this really happen?
I honestly don't know where this book came from. This is like there was a point where I was reading and I was like, wait a minute. What happened before this? I was dazed, dude. I was like, what the heck's going on? It almost felt like this book kind of got away from them. It was definitely confusing.
Well, there's a couple things in here that, you know, this story, our last arc that we had ended where we see Flashpoint Batman.
Yeah.
And, as a cliffhanger. And it ends, and last issue it goes into the master Bruce villain, the boy villain that killed his parents to be like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And if you noticed it or not, this arc, which is like, you know, single issues that don't seem to be connected, it's the name of it is Nightmares.
It's definitely like one shot type feel.
Yes. Now, if you think about last issue and this issue, you think, well, did that really happen? Because last issue, you had the same sort of thing. You were a little confused because you thought you saw some sort of retelling of his parents dying and them trying to solve the murder. and come to find out it was in this kid's head. So you thought.
Yeah, it was in his perspective.
But this seems to me like this is an aftermath of whatever happens mm-hmm. to Bruce. Now, there are some dialogue. There's some dialogue in here that says, your father
yeah.
is here. And then there's in quotes, it says, Master Bruce, ... why? And that's all there is. At first, this sort of makes sense if this was jumping forward that, okay, he's been defeated by Flashpoint Batman mm-hmm. and he's being tortured by Professor Pig. So it's sort of at the beginning here, there's a lot of dialogue and this is very wordy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But one of the cool parts, if I have to pick out one of the coolest parts, is, you know, he has a batarang taped to his back.
To his chest, he says.
To his chest. And the way he describes it, he gets the tip of the batarang with his finger and it goes to the flesh and catches onto the bone. Which is pretty graphic.
Right. And this whole issue is super graphic, you know what I mean? First of all, he's hanging there. There's blood all over the place. I mean, if we're going to talk about graphic, the look at the front page, dude, you know? Professor Pig with blood splattered all over the place.
Oh, yeah, and he stabs him with that big butcher knife. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You see how big that knife is and how deep it went in?
Yeah. But the one thing that I do like about this whole thing is he's talking to himself. And I love that. And he keeps saying, why can't you hear him? Why can't you hear? He's talking. They love the talk. They love the talk. I love that dialogue there. It is a little too wordy in some places. There was one page where the whole thing was like tons and tons of word boxes. And I said, oh my gosh, that's a whole ton to read there. But I mean, I did like this issue. It was a little confusing and I did get a little frustrated towards the end there. But all in all, I think it was actually a pretty good book.
It has to represent something. This story here has to, there has to be some meaning that we haven't got to yet.
You would think, right?
Yeah, I can say this is definitely not my favorite issue because I read it and was like, it took me a couple more reads just to get the gist of of what he was trying to convey here. But I
was left with the same feeling.
I don't know.
I was left with the same exact feeling. It's just this whole arc just feels kind of weird to me.
It feels kind of off because after the cliffhanger, you kind of have these two standalone stories and you're kind of...
But if the way you're explaining it, if that theory is true, I could see why they did it this way.
If something is going on with him where... You know, they're putting him through, he's captured now.
Yeah.
And something is being done with him and he's having these nightmares.
Yeah, it's almost like a dream state. You think about it. The reason why he can't hear is because it's like a dream, you know? Have you ever had one of those dreams where like you're running and you're like, I wish I could run really fast, but it feels like you're walking through molasses? I think this is like one of those things where maybe he's creating these nightmares out of the scenario of what's happening to him. When he's being captured by his father.
And if you think about it, you think about, okay, what would be Bruce's fear? One of the fears that he turned into this kid, you know, Master Bruce.
Uh-huh.
What if that was him? What if he turned into, you know, a killer instead of... I know that doesn't make any sense at all, but...
No, it does.
I'm just trying to make sense of these nightmares.
No, it does.
And what's another fear that he's captured... He's hanging upside down. He can't hear anything. He can't communicate.
Yeah, that's another fear of his. He can't communicate.
And then why does Robin show up, Damian show up at the end?
Yeah, there's an unresolved issue there with him.
Well, we'll see what happens next issue.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to bring up is Professor Pig shows up here, and we've seen him here and there. You know, Grant Morrison created this character. What's interesting that he was created after a character in Greek mythology called Pygmalion.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right or not, but it was actually a play created by George Bernard Shaw in 1913, where this character falls in love with one of his sculptures and then the sculpture comes to life.
Okay.
Very odd character. And I don't know if you remember this villain previously, but he was like trying to make these Dolatrons, yeah, where he basically takes their face and puts a new face on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sort of like a sculpture, I guess. He's a really messed up villain.
Which is, they do quote that a little bit here in this book.
Yeah, and I remember in a story, it was Arkham something. It was some crossover. Uh-huh. From a couple years ago, he was actually replacing limbs of somebody.
Oh, wow.
Replacing, yeah, their arms with, like, you know, pig hooves or, yeah, something like that.
This character is so messed up.
Yeah, pretty messed up.
Yeah, man. All in all, this book was good. I mean, the artwork was good. The dialogue was all right in some places. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's a bad issue, and it's not, I mean, it's not my favorite issue. But now, thinking about it in a grander scale, putting these last three issues together, now they kind of work a little bit better.
Even if we really understand what's going on here.
Yeah, I don't think we fully understand, but if you're going to look at these last three issues, you kind of understand why you were so confused in the last issue and why you're confused in this one. So I just hope that they give us some answers in the next issue.
Yeah, that would be nice, but I would count on it.
I shouldn't hold my breath on that one.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on it, so yeah. So anything else you'd like to add? I mean, the art was fantastic. The one thing I wanted to bring up was that Frank Miller variant cover.
Oh, man, that was awesome, wasn't it? I like Frank Miller art, man. Yeah,
love it. So let's head on to our next segment, which is Topic of the Week.
Somewhere in Gotham City, Selina Kyle, better known as Catwoman, enters the secret hideout of the shadowy villain known to the world as the Eraser.
Catwoman, you've come!
Perhaps you've mistaken me for a dog eraser. I'm paid up 10% to erase all evidence of my crimes, just like always. I'm a customer, not some lackey to be at your beck and call. I'm sure you wouldn't want me to drop your name to Batman.
Oh, delightful. Go ahead, tell your precious Batman that Larry Fiasco is still free. Tell him he's been outwitted by his old college chum. Imagine his reaction when he finds out I've been behind every major event in his career. I'm sure he won't laugh in your face. Or you could listen to my offer instead.
I'm listening.
I'm afraid the Batpod is going to reveal the greatest secret in all of Gotham City. Bob, from A Gal Walks in a Comic Shop, is going to announce me publicly as Batman's greatest foe. Oh, once that happens, everything I built will be destroyed. No, it looks like it's time for me to do some erasing. Oh, I've worked too hard on building this facade, lying in wait, creating distractions, making everyone think I was a joke. Why else would I wear this costume? Do you know how hard it is to find a yellow striped suit?
I just assumed you had a thing for pencils.
Regardless, I've already arranged a kidnapping. Look in that cage.
You've kidnapped Joey. But why? I thought it was Bob who was going to reveal your identity.
That would be too obvious for me, the Eraser. And it's only a matter of time before Batman comes to the rescue. If I kidnap Bob, it would just be obvious to the so-called world's greatest detective. He would make permanent ink out of my plans. You see, as long as Joey mocks Bob for his correct view that I am Batman's greatest villain, Bob will just seem like some kook on the internet. Sadly, Joey is smarter than he looks.
I mean, wouldn't he have to be? Look at him.
Now, all I need to do is to tap into the secret red phone that the Batpod uses to record and play this MP3 of Joey. It's a clever edit I made. It'll make him seem like the average fan who will scoff at Bob, and no one will be the wiser.
Fiendish. But won't people suspect that Joey isn't actually on this edition of the Batpod and is instead just a recording?
Oh, there'll be moments when I can't make it work, but I'm the Eraser! Plans within plans. Did you ever wonder why Grey's Anatomy is still on the air?
Grey's Anatomy is still on the air? Really?
It's all a cover for my master plan, obviously. Still, in this case, I will simply make it seem like Joey's wife, his charming wife, is simply binging on the show via a streaming service, thus explaining the times when he drops off the internet.
You still haven't explained what you need me for.
Oh, you'll find out.
Joey kidnapped, the racer behind it all. Will Joey be able to escape? Will you, the listener, be able to tell that Joey hasn't actually been live this entire recording? Stay tuned for the next part of our chilling adventure here on the Bat Pod.
Welcome to Topic of the Week. And this week, with Joey and myself, we have Bob from the Gal Walks Into the Comic Shop podcast. How you doing, Bob?
Doing great, Joey. How's everything going with you? And Bill, glad to see that you're not sick anymore.
Thank you very much. Yes, we had a few recording issues, but we're back to 100% and better than ever.
Well, and I mean, in fairness, leprosy really is serious. And I'm glad, Bill, I'm glad you no longer have to walk around with a bell saying unclean, unclean, and ringing all the time. It's a nice change.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
This is why we do the podcast remotely.
Wow.
It's Bill recording live from Leper Island.
So anyway, our topic this week, we all picked the top three Batman villains. Our top three Batman villains. And since, Bob, you're the guest tonight, would you like to go first with, like, your number three?
You know, oddly enough, my number three should be my number two, because I'm going to pick one, which obviously all of you probably have on your list. I'm going to be that guy. But Two-Face, Harvey Dent, one of the most brilliant characters in comics. He has that feeling of the great Chester Gould, Dick Tracy villains, and he actually predates a lot of the Dick Tracy villains. So who's cribbing from who? But the idea of the duality of man, the idea of that gimmick of the coin flip, and the fact that the character works so well that even when there's Harvey Dent imposters, there were two people who impersonated Harvey Dent as Two-Face in the original Batman series, it still works because the core concept of the character is great. And he is one of my absolute favorites of all time. And, you know, from his very beginning in the 40s to when Denny O'Neill brought him back in the 70s, he's always been something that's been something terrifying, relatable, and he's just the perfect foil for Batman. Batman's wearing the mask on the outside. Two-Face eschews that. He is instead that mask, that duality is present right there in your face. Love the guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome, yeah.
He's in my top three. And talking about that Denny O'Neill issue, I can't remember the issue on the top of my head. But there's a scene in that issue where he has to decide to save this little guy on a boat, if you remember that issue.
Absolutely.
And he has to flip the coin. And if he saves the guy on the boat, he's going to get caught. And it's just that, you know, every decision is made by the flip of this coin.
Yeah.
Well, he's binary in the age before computers, right? We live in a digital age of zeros and ones, yes or no's. All these decisions that form the grand tapestry of living. And you boil it down, it's really nothing more than, you know, a good side or scarred side, a one and zero. And maybe he resonates even more today. And I don't know if either of you guys have ever done that. Have you ever had that really weird phase in your life where you spend like a couple of weeks actually living by a coin flip?
No, can't say I have.
Oh, you should have tried it when you were at. It's great. It's like all these weird decisions. Like, I don't know, should I go up to that girl in the bar? Bam, flip the coin. I had a coin with two heads and scarred up one side. And yeah, literally did the whole Two-Face thing for a week. It's great. Gave a whole new perspective.
That would probably work a lot better when I was younger. You know, didn't have as many responsibilities and that sort of thing.
Right. I imagine at work nowadays, you know, boss goes, hey, we need that paperwork done. And you flip a coin. He goes, no way, boss. I'm out of here. I'm having a drink.
Right. I'm over here thinking, should I do that? Flip a coin whether I should feed my kids or not today? My wife motioned to me. She said, I vote not.
All right. So I guess we'll all put away coins then.
Very good. Very good. So, Joey, who's your number three?
So, my number three is okay, I've always said this. I'm always going to go for the super cheesy villains or the super cheesy choices here because I represent the the guys who grew up in the 90s who, and the 90s guys, they grew up with the animated series, right? And the animated series, they had a lot to do with three main villains. My number three is going to be Scarecrow. He was all over that place, right? All over the animated series. He came out back when, you know, in World's Finest number three in 1941. So he was one of the main first handful of villains back then, right? And he came into Batman. So I love him because of how simplistic he is, but he's just so complicated at the same time. He's just this amazing character that, you know, he gasses Batman sometimes, and he's a pretty fun character. That's going to be my number three.
Good choice. What did you think about the redesign of Scarecrow in the animated series, where he went from the first, the first style to the one with the hangman noose around his neck?
You could tell that they were getting a little bit darker towards the end there. So it was cool for what it was.
Yeah, and I can't say I'm too familiar with the Batman cartoon version of that, but the Batman Begins version, I thought he was awesome in that movie.
He was genuinely scary in that. And I forgot the actor who played Jonathan Crane, but man, he captured that feeling so well. It's like he's coming right off the comic page.
And then when he puts on the hood, he has like that one, it doesn't even look like a mask. It just looks like, you know, a sack. He puts a sack on his head and it has like one eye hole. And
Cillian Murphy, he's a great actor. He's in a handful of movies that I really like. I mean, he's in Peaky Blinders, man. That show's awesome.
Oh my God, I completely forgot he was in that.
Yeah, he's the Scarecrow, dude. He's stinking cool.
Well, the one thing that we can say about all these villains, whoever we pick, these villains are so great across the board that none of them is wrong, you know? They're all great. My number three actually was Two-Face. Love Two-Face. I actually really love the version in the Dark Knight movie. I loved, even though it was set up a little differently, I always thought, you know, it's hard to put, you know, his origin scene, you know, of Batman trying to save him from being acid being thrown in his face, which they did in Batman Forever, but
so badly.
No, that was the best scene.
But yeah, the way that it was done in the Dark Knight, I thought it was great.
I don't know, man. That Batman Forever scene, man, he almost got there.
I really liked him as the Harvey Dent role, but there wasn't enough of Two-Face.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't.
Yeah.
Other than definitely better than the Tommy Lee Jones version of Two-Face. Tommy Lee Jones, you're a great actor. What the hell are you thinking of that role? Oh, I'm gonna start with Jim Carrey, and I'm somehow going to be more hammy than Jim Carrey. Good luck with that, dude. I'm sure that's a great direction.
I mean, you got to,
and he was
right?
All bright and colorful and purple.
Although his two female sidekicks, I got to admit, I kind of dug that when I was a teenager, but, you know.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad one. So, yeah. So let's go to number two. Bob, what is your number two?
Okay, so my number two is the Riddler. Partly because he can work in so many different kinds of stories. And the fact that the weirdness of him is that his only superpower is that he is a weakness, right? Like his gimmick is getting himself more and more in trouble. But he's obviously a genius. And here's the story I want to tell someday in a Batman comic. It's, you know, the Riddler is, you know, going to send out his clues. And his two henchmen realize the Riddler is such a genius. Every single one of his plans is always going to work, except he keeps on, you know, giving it away to Batman. So I love the idea of these two thugs of his. They're supposed to deliver the riddle. And so what they do is they change the riddle. And they send the changed riddle off to Batman. So Batman is always getting it wrong. And so they're succeeding. And the Riddler is going, my plan worked, but ooh, did I actually outsmart Batman or not? And I would love that. But I just love this idea of this guy who, he could do anything. He's so brilliant. And yet, he will continually screw himself up. Edward Nygma is a great character. And there's so much you could do with him. And by the way, in the Batman 66, Frank Gorsham did such a great job with him. He's better than the Joker in the Batman series.
So what did you think of the new 52 rebirth direction of the Riddler? You know, well, they've made him like this killer and mass murderer type of deal.
Well, you know, the great thing about being a functional alcoholic is that I'm able to completely black out comics I don't like. And so it's great. Everyone should try it. No, it's, I don't know. I mean, that's not the Riddler I liked. I really like Paul Dini's take right before New 52, where the Riddler is opening his detective agency.
Yes, that's
a really fascinating take on him. And I'm not sure if you ever read it. Have you ever guys read the series The Question, the original, well, not the original, that'd be the Steve Ditko one, but the Denny O'Neill Question series?
I've read a little bit of it, yes.
Okay, there's one that featured the Riddler. And so Vic Sage, the Question, is he's wounded, he's injured, he's beaten down as low as he can be. In the meantime, the Riddler is in jail. And the Riddler has this, you know, question. James Gordon is in the interrogation room, and James Gordon goes, you know, Eddie, we figured out what your clue was. It was obvious. And Riddler goes, oh, did Batman figure it out? And James Gordon goes, no, Eddie, it was obvious. You should really give up being a criminal. So Riddler is on a bus, and he's, you know, poor, broke. And this stripper sits down next to him, and she is a crazy, psychotic, thrill-kill murderer. And the two of them hijack this bus and start asking questions. And it is a great comic. And at the end of it, the Question defeats the Riddler by asking questions. The Question is emerging from the darkness, you know, with no face. And he's, you know, saying, you know, he's going, if you want a real riddle, you know, why, if man is inherently good, how can there be evil in the world? That's a real riddle. And the Riddler breaks down and says, the reason I tell these, you know, schoolyard riddles is because I'm afraid of the real questions. And it's a great ending to the comic. So, yeah, everyone should check out that issue of The Question if you really dig into your background.
That sounds very interesting.
It definitely does.
Yeah, I remember when he was a detective, that Paul Dini detective run was very good. Really enjoyed when Paul Dini was writing those. And they weren't like, it wasn't long arcs. They were like standalone stories a lot of times from what I recall.
Yeah, and Paul Dini was really kind of hearkening back to the classic, you know, let's tell a good story in one or two issues. And good God, I wish there was more people like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the most important question that we have is Batman Forever is in the Riddler. What'd you think?
Did I mention the blackout drunk? This would be a great time to reiterate that.
Yeah, I always thought that Jim Carrey would have been. I think he that wasn't the Riddler he was playing. He was playing the Joker in that movie.
But it's also Jim Carrey, because I mean, he always, because Frank Gorsham at the time was as big a comedian as Jim Carrey was in his, and Jim Carrey was a huge Jim Gorsham fan. Now, if you've ever heard Jim Gorsham's albums, the man was a brilliant impressionist, and he's so funny. Carrey must have grew up with him, so I think he's trying to do the Frank Gorsham Riddler, who is absolutely bat crazy. And I almost forgot this was a clean podcast. He's absolutely crazy, and he is very much like more like the Joker than, you know, than Cesar Romero is the Joker in the Batman series. So I think Jim Carrey is trying to do that, and he's not as good as Frank Gorsham, because Frank Gorsham, you felt like you're watching a man who really is on the edge of madness. Jim Carrey is, yeah, you funny boy, you're pretending to be crazy. That's not crazy, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sure Joel Schumacher didn't help that situation any at all.
But, you know, I mean, once again, Schumacher was trying to do Batman 66, but the studio is telling him to do, you know, is telling him to do Tim Burton. And if you try and do two things at once, it doesn't always work out, you know? So
No.
And maybe it, like a completely crazy Schumacher film really could have worked. If he went just completely overboard, like so over the top you couldn't believe it, maybe it would have been a well-remembered movie. It wouldn't have been a box office hit, but I think we'd look back on it going, yeah, that's a really enjoyable movie. Instead, it's a mess. It's a complete disaster.
Or it could have been Batman and Robin.
Here's to blackout drunks again.
Okay.
You guys are talking about my favorite movies in the 90s, man.
Okay. We're looking for a new co-host for the Bat Pod.
I think he's asking you, Bob.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it really is. You can't talk about comics on a podcast if you like the Schumacher movies. I think there's absolutely a dead set law on that.
There you go. I'm out of a job.
Well, anyway, let's move on. And Joey, what is your number two?
Are you sure you want to know? My number two is, again, I'm going back to the 90s, is Penguin. And obviously I grew up with animated series. I grew up with Batman 89 and, Penguin's all over that place too. Penguin is one of my favorite characters because of, you know, some iterations he's this gangster, some iterations he's a little wacky, and he's just this low level guy. Then he could be pretty up there. So I love that he's so versatile that some iterations use him, to where, you know, he is a big thorn in Batman's side. I love what they're doing with his character right now in Gotham. He's this little weasel type guy. And he's always thinking ahead. He's always got something. He's always working some kind of plan. He's always trying to get over on somebody. Sometimes he's a follower, but not quite, because he's just in that position because he's got something. He's gonna weasel in there so that he can get himself to the top to propel himself back to the top. And I love that. That is who I believe Penguin is. He's that guy that just sometimes he sits back and wait so that he can get himself back up to the top.
And like any great Batman villain, there's a level of sympathy you can have when you take a look at what caused him. You know, I think about this, you know, kid who was, you know, forced by his mother to always have to carry an umbrella when he went outside, who was always picked on by the other kids. And his way of dealing with being bullied and feeling little was to become very cold and very evil. There's something relatable about that, right? Like it's so human, yeah, that we can almost dig it. And he's another character that can work in lots of different kinds of stories. You could have, you know, a Penguin with a giant umbrella in space shooting down death beams, or you'd have a Penguin who's sitting back at the Iceberg Club and running a numbers racket. He can, yeah, work in different stories, and he still fits.
Yeah.
Yeah, the version that I really love is the gangster, you know, what we have in the last 10 to 15 years, where he runs the Iceberg Lounge and you know, he has all the girls and you know, when he grew up and he's a slightly disfigured and he gets picked on and made fun of, he's at that point where he's sitting behind the desk and would say, look at me now, you know? I just love that version of the Penguin. And he's actually, yeah, my number two.
Cool.
But he's one of the guys that doesn't necessarily go to Arkham anymore. We had discussed that at one point. They used to send all the villains to Arkham. But Penguin is one of the ones that usually goes to Blackgate, because he's not really, you know, insane as some of the others. He's cold and calculated and knows exactly what he's doing. And
yeah, and I said, the, you know, one of the reasons why the Batman stories work so well, or Batman villains work more than any other villains, like you can't picture like a Spider-Man villain, you can't picture the Vulture or the Rhino in a different kind of setting, right? They can do one thing. You can't picture Mogul being portrayed as both a, you know, low-level gangster and an intergalactic menace. No, he's Mogul. He's an intergalactic menace.
Yeah.
Batman villains, more so than any other character's rogue gallery, can do so many different things, partly because they've been in so many different kinds of stories over the decades.
I have to agree with that.
Yep. And the Penguin is, you know, he's, out of all the villains, I think he could be set in reality the most, you know, the most realistic of all the villains. You could actually picture him and see him in the real world.
You see Danny DeVito eating up some fish there?
Every morning when I wake up and look in the mirror.
Yeah. You might want to file down those teeth a little bit.
Or not keep herrings in the mirror, in the bathroom mirror, you know?
He's got a bucket sitting there.
Yeah, just wake up in the morning, do my business, eat the fish, look in the mirror going, oh my God, it's another day.
Bloodstained t-shirt.
So, okay, let's get to our number one. Bob, what is your favorite Batman villain?
Okay, now I want to preface this with by saying that I didn't want to have something that anyone else had. And I want to ask the character that has potential. Now, if I said 3 years ago that the character of Kite Man could be an intriguing villain, everyone would have nodded and go, you're an idiot. But, you know, it showed in the hands of Tom King. Kite Man was great, right? We all loved Kite Man recently. So my number one is a college associate of Bruce Wayne's. He went to college with Bruce Wayne, Mr. Larry Fiasco, who went to college with Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne was actually very mean to him. And one time Bruce Wayne went on a date with a girl, and it was the girl that Larry Fiasco loved. It snapped Larry Fiasco, especially when it turned out later on that Bruce Wayne didn't even remember this girl's name. So he came up with this great idea. He is going to provide a service for the underworld. So there's this underground paper in Gotham City called the Secret Underground, and all the criminals in Gotham City read it. And he puts out an ad that he will clean up your crime scene for merely 20% of the take. And he's really good at it. And this man is the Eraser. Now, the Eraser has the worst costume in all of Batman's rogue gallery. And there's been some bad ones. Like Crazy Quilt looks at the Eraser and says, "What the heck were you thinking?" Because what he does is he has a giant eraser on his head, and he wears a yellow striped suit like a number two pencil. And he has big pointy shoes. Now, you think, that doesn't work. And the name, Larry Fiasco, that doesn't work. But there is this idea of, first of all, the catch of guy who cleans up crime scenes, of all evidence. That's a great foil for Batman. Someone who has a hatred of Bruce Wayne. Well, that's a great character. Why didn't he work? Well, it was that costume he wore. When he would erase the crime scene, he would literally take off the mask, the giant eraser, and then erase things in the alleyway. It's insane. But I think there is so much potential in this character of that person who is jealous of who Bruce Wayne is, because you can examine who the heck Bruce Wayne is to people outside him. We know Bruce Wayne's a great guy, but for everyone else, you think, here's this lazy playboy, right? Like, why wouldn't you be jealous of him? Why wouldn't you hate him? Why wouldn't he be like a Cardassian or whoever else is rich and out there? And so if you had this character and you did him right, he would be a brilliant Batman villain. So I'm saying this right now in the year 2019. I'm saying the Eraser is my favorite villain because I know, I guarantee you, within 10 to 20 years, somebody is going to do the great Eraser story and he will become everyone's favorite villain. I'm going to jump ahead of the curve and say he's my number one villain right now. Wild card!
Is that your pitch for Tom King to bring the Eraser?
Well, he would do it over the course of 10 issues and leave me angry at various moments during those 10 issues. So I don't know. I don't know who it is. There's a kid out there right now. There's a kid who's playing with his eraser going, I love erasers. I don't know. He hits upon Wikipedia. I don't know how it's going to happen. But I tell you, every single other Batman villain in the world, someone's tried to do something with him. And I'm saying the Eraser is out there. He's a college buddy of Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne stole his girlfriend and he has a great gimmick. Somebody run with it, and I'm going to look like a freaking genius in just 10 or 20 years. Heard it here first.
Absolutely. You heard it here first. The Eraser. One of the top villains, at least for Bob.
All right, top that.
Joey, what's your number one? Joey?
See, Joey was so blown away by the Eraser. He said, you know what? I'm quitting podcasting. I'm going to go out and write the Eraser story. We'll see him in 4 years. He'll come back, his beard longer than ever, down on the ground with like a 1,000 pages of script going, oh, yes, Eraser is a great character.
Joey's been erased. It's a sad day.
I suspect Larry Fiasco.
Can you hear me?
We thought you were erased.
I was going to say, the Eraser's my son's favorite character, too, because he loves to put them in his ears.
Well, at least it's only the ear.
Yes. That is hopefully. All right, so my number one, it's going to be real easy. Dude, it's not the Eraser. Come on. But It's one that is probably that, I mean, I can't top that. Can I really top? Mine's gonna be the Joker. I mean, that's an easy cheesy one, right? It's the Joker for all obvious reasons. I think Batman's probably greatest foe. You know, kind of like the Eraser is my son's favorite foe. The greatest foe. But, you know, I love Joker. You know, they're still doing him to this day in every iteration you can think of. There's so many movies out there. There's so many people who've acted and voiceover and written him in so many different ways that is awesome. You know, we're going to be talking about a book here pretty soon. You know, Batman Who Laughs, where Joker is a big part of that. Joker is just a big part of Batman, and that's why he's my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree with that. On the other hand, there's also kind of a feeling of Joker fatigue. We've seen him
yes.
in so many different ways that if I didn't see Joker again for another 10 years, I wouldn't be that upset. I would be going, okay, yeah, it's nice to have a break. And when he came back, I would be going,
yeah.
Yes, I love it. But right now, every time I see the Joker or Batman turning into the Joker or Judge Death or whatever he's doing in Batman Who Laughs, and boy, I have opinions about that one. And I would rather not. I mean, he's a great character in theory, and usually he works, but he's so easy to overplay. He has that seasoning that is wonderful. He's like a truffle oil in your food, but if you're just pouring it on, it becomes terrible and awful and spoiled. And I have to admit, I think the Joker's spoiled for me right now. Last time I enjoyed him was probably Grant Morrison and, you know, Batman RIP.
Okay.
But I've not enjoyed a Joker story since, and I wish I could.
I do gotta say that I do love this new theory that's coming out of Dark Knight's metal, that he's got this toxin in his heart, and if he dies, it seeps out and turns somebody else into the Joker. That, I love that idea.
It's better than him being a immortal being, possibly yes, no, you know, via Scott Snyder. So, but I always liked the idea that if Batman killed him, Batman would become something corrupted. It's something spiritual. When it's something physical, like, you're going to become like me because I'm going to shoot gas into your face. Well, all of a sudden you lose the metaphor. You lose the philosophy that made that whole duality great. So... but I agree with you. Joker has to be the number one villain. Number two, I mean, obviously, right after the Eraser.
Well, anyway, my number one is also the Joker. And when I first started reading comics, you know, the Joker would show up and you would be all excited. It would be something big that he would show up in. And then he would go yeah. away. It's not like today. It's like every time you look, the Joker's in something new.
Yeah.
He's in, you know, the Injustice League or Legion of Doom or whatever it is. Or he's in this Batman book. He's in that Batman book. But back in the 80s, you know, early 90s, he wasn't used, or at least it didn't seem like he was used that much. So when he showed up, it felt kind of special. You okay, Joey? You still with us?
Oh, he got erased again.
To the world, it seems like Joey has dropped out of the recording. Many think it a simple problem with a bad internet connection. But Catwoman and the Eraser know the truth. We rejoin the kidnapping already in progress.
It's working. They both think they're actually talking to Joey. Perhaps your plan will actually work.
Oh, it's working. By now the audience will think that Bob is just another crazy person. If the real Joey had been there, he would have put the pieces together. Instead, everyone will think he simply lost his internet connection. Now, according to my cameras in the Batcave, it's just a matter of seconds before Joey is rescued by the Bat. And that's why you're here. Batman will blame you, Catwoman.
I'm not going to take the fall for you, Larry Fiasco.
Oh, I think you will. If you don't, perhaps I'll reveal to the world about the time and Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane number 79, where you turned Superman into a cat and Lois Lane took your place.
You wouldn't. That was an embarrassingly dumb comic.
Give my regards to Bruce.
He's escaping down a secret tunnel. Oh no! Batman is crashing through the skylight.
Selina, you've gone too far this time. Kidnapping a man, even if he has a silly beard, is a serious crime.
You caught me, Batman. I'll let Joey go.
Oh, good. It looks like he only suffered minimal brain damage during the ordeal. I don't think he'll remember any of it. He's going back to the Bat Pod. And you, you're going to jail, Catwoman.
And so the day is saved. Will the listeners of the Bat Pod ever know that Joey's internet connection problems were just part of a master plan? How did Bob know that the Eraser was such a great villain? Is Bill actually wearing pants when he records? Find out in the next edition of The Bat Pod.
Back in the 80s and 90s, every time that the Joker would show up, it felt special to me. If it was Death in the Family or something like that. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like he was being overused, and I got excited every time he showed up. And you know, Batman 66, that laugh. You could hear that in your sleep and know who that was.
Yeah, I think the problem with Joker is that he's so good that he becomes too easy, and he becomes very easy for a writer who needs something quick to do. That, oh, you're like a dark reflection of who I am, man, that's so deep. Well, yeah, it's really deep when you're like 15, right? But but you grow up with that, and it becomes such an easy metaphor on every single level that it's so easy that your stories are usually going to be bad, because anything that's easy is not going to be good. And I think that maybe that's part of the problem with the Joker, is that there aren't a lot of great Joker stories. But when there is a great Joker story, it's brilliant. But most of them, I find myself rolling my eyes going, oh, God, I wish you didn't use the Joker. Make up a new character. Or use the Joker's little midget sidekick from back in the 60s. What was his name? Lappy? Just something. I wish I loved the Joker as much as I did even 10 years ago. But the past decade has been just, I feel like I've been overdosed on the Joker toxin. And now all of a sudden I'm completely immune to it. I'm like Batman at this point, right? Like, spray it in my face. I'm going to find a way to get around it. I'm not in love with the Joker anymore, but he is such a great character. Maybe it's because he's too great. That's why you can't have him as a villain. I was also going to say that also, if you have in every single Sherlock Holmes story, the solution is Moriarty did it. Sherlock Holmes stories would suck, right? But instead, you use Moriarty once, and he stays as a shadow in the rest of the short stories. And I think that's probably the best way to use the Joker, is that you use him once in a great while. And, you know, Bill, as you mentioned, big event. But then you don't use him. He's merely a shadow that is there, and there's something creepy about that.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree with that. You know, he would be so much more effective if, you know, you used him even once every 2 years, you know. People would crave it, you know.
Yeah.
And we seem like you can't go in the past year, you could probably name a dozen books he's been in at least.
Everything. Books, TV shows, movies, everything.
And he has a different personality in each book.
Yeah.
Yeah, tease it where like 6 months before, you know, Batman's in an alleyway. You just hear this laughter from the darkness. And Batman turns to investigate. And nothing more about that for like another 6 months. Man, when he shows up, payoff.
Right. Yeah, his character is getting a little saturated all over the place.
Which is, furthermore, why the Eraser is number one villain, because he's not oversaturated.
All right.
Well, it sounds like the Eraser might be their number one. We keep hearing Eraser, Eraser, Eraser.
It's, you know, it's a kind of sound logic that not even Batman could overcome. Obviously, the Eraser is the most brilliant bad guy, the most fiendish of his rogues. The man was so evil that there was no actor who could possibly portray the madness of the Eraser.
There you go.
They said to Burgess Meredith, do you want to be Larry Fiasco? And Burgess Meredith goes, wah, 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 and says, no, I want to be the Penguin instead. So they give him the Penguin, and they go to Cesar Romero, go, look, we need somebody who could be as good as the Eraser is in this one comic book. And Cesar Romero goes, no, no, put some pancake makeup on me, and so on and so forth. And that's why we never saw the Eraser in Batman 66. But mark my words, when the big, major blockbuster movie comes out with the Eraser as the main villain, y'all will be thanking me. You're going to be calling me saying, Bob, you know what? Maybe we should have taken that a little bit more seriously. You're right. We love the Eraser.
There you go.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. When I tweet out this episode, I will hashtag the Eraser. So everybody that you know goes to that Eraser hashtag, they will have one tweet. Actually, it might be more than one tweet because you might be connected to that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie of the 90s, Eraser.
So wait, you guys are saying Eraser, not Erasure, right?
No, we don't need any bad new wave, and nor are we saying Eraser had. David Lynch did not direct it. However, if David Lynch wants to direct the Eraser versus Batman, Warner Brothers, just give them money to do it.
I don't know. I kept hearing Eraser, and I kept agreeing with you guys because I was like, dude, these guys are awesome.
Wow. Are you still connected over there? Now, that was a very good conversation. Very good. It's always fun to talk about your favorite villains, talking about bad villains. Anything Batman is fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, guys, you can have me on anytime you want because this is a lot of fun. I could talk about Batman villains forever. Probably a little bit less obscure than the Eraser, but I just, once again, you know, there's potential in that character.
Okay. Well, we really appreciate you coming on and joining us there.
Yeah, guys, I love your podcast. I love the Bat Pod. I will be trying to pick it up in the new year with doing the writing on the page, but everything has been crazy this holiday season, but hopefully things will calm down. If I don't keep on doing more and more podcasts, that is.
That's cool.
Hey, man, I understand. I put too much on my plate with all the podcasts that I'm doing now myself. Tell us a little bit about the other stuff that you're doing really quick, Bob.
Yeah, yes. So the two main things, obviously, there's a Galwalk's comic shop, you know, all about introducing someone new to the world of comics, although it's been about half a year, and she's read probably about 70 comic books by now. And then the other one is a really cool project. This one's a little bit different. It's called Trust Your Cape. So I have Chris from the incredible Professor Frenzy podcast and the Bat Books for Beginner podcast. I have September. She's from this great podcast called Geek Grills. And the whole idea is they are playing themselves if they had been superheroes back when they were teenagers. And we just had the pilot episode on our feed. And probably within a week, we'll be launching the Trust Your Cape webpage and everything. It's a role playing game. It's like one of those real play podcasts that you've heard. Here's the little catch, though. It is the only podcast that is actually going to be giving every listener a free role playing game because I'm designing the role playing game we're using on the podcast. So I'm going to have free of charge. Anyone can download. Anyone can play games in this universe. A role playing game. They'll be free and available for everyone. And eventually I'll have all the storylines as modules so that people can play along at home. And I think it's going to be really exciting and fun. It's called Trust Your Cape.
Very cool. Sounds very cool.
That sounds like a really cool thing, Bob. When I heard about that, that was awesome. Maybe I can talk Bill into maybe downloading one of those games there. Maybe we can play it one of these episodes here on the show.
How about something better? You and Bill as superheroes. I have this great idea. We ought to play a role-playing game with you two as heroes. What do you think, Bill?
I'm there.
That All sounds right. like a whole lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
All right. Will you guys start making your cosplay costumes and get ready for it? Because sometime over the next few weeks, we'll start that ball rolling. And yeah, let's do it, man. I think they'll be awesome.
Cool.
Very cool. Thanks again for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy anytime I can contribute to the Bat Pod family. Happy to be a little bit of a part of it. And, you guys keep on keeping on because it is just awesome stuff you guys are doing.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good night, everyone.
All right. See you later.
See ya.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Joey Galvez. And, man, that was a great topic. I don't know about you guys, but I enjoyed it. But for some reason, I'm having a little bit of memory loss. Can't put my finger on it. I can't remember what I was about to do or say. Oh, I'm supposed to be introducing this next promo. Check it out. We've got a really cool promo coming up from a really awesome podcast, The Professor Frenzy Show. Stick around and have a listen.
Night falls on the great halls of Frenzywood. Chris and Jerry read this week's comics with a sense of terror and foreboding. Which books will they enjoy, and which will unsettle them with an eerie mood striking into their very souls? They work their way through the rare and mysterious tomes to find those worthy of your attention. A knock comes to the door, bringing something strange and otherworldly that no one has ever seen before. It's
the Professor Frenzy Show.
Professor Frenzy, it's a show. Professor Frenzy Show. Professor Frenzy, it's a show. Professor Frenzy Show.
If you like indie comics and also like podcasts, please try the Professor Frenzy Show. Find the show in iTunes search and Facebook. Episodes tweeted out on at Professor Frenzy on Twitter.
Now, didn't that make you want to listen to that awesome podcast? All right, next up, we're going to be listening to the second book.
All right, this week, I'm going to be talking about The Batman Who Laughs number one. And let's go ahead and talk about the creative team. We've got Scott Snyder as the writer, Jock as the artist, David Barron on the colors, Sal Cipriano on letters, Jock has the cover, Greg Capullo, and FCO Placencia has a variant cover, Dave Wagles, assistant editor, Katie Kuber, editor, Jamie S. Rich, group editor. And Batman was created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. In this issue, Batman discovers a happy Bruce in a casket. There's also a Batman with guns shooting his way through Arkham. The Batman Who Laughs kills a decoy Joker. Batman reveals a super toxin theory that has come out of Dark Knight's metal. We also see clues that Batman pulls on a thread and leads straight to the Joker, drifting down a waterway into the Batcave. The ending is one for the history books. That leaves me wondering, did we see Joker die? What did you think about this book, Bill?
I thought it was very interesting, that's for sure. Because, you know, I read Dark Knight's Metal.
Uh-huh.
It definitely wasn't my favorite crossover, and I didn't really know what to think of this particular villain.
Okay.
It's basically a Batman from a dark, you know, universe. It's actually Batman that has been Jokerized.
Yeah, Batman from Earth 22, I believe.
Of the dark multiverse.
Yes.
So it's very interesting. I mean, we start this issue right off the back, and it's pretty action-packed. After we see that, you know, we have a moment with Bruce and his parents and the little game they played.
Yeah.
It goes right into action, and I thought at first, hey, is that the Batpod?
Yeah, it is. That's pretty cool to see that, huh?
Well, it's the Bat-Raptor.
Oh.
At least that's what Alfred calls it.
So. Man. They messed that one up, didn't they?
Yeah, the thing that I'm finding, you know, similar, he finds the coffin.
Uh-huh.
In the portable house that they have on the tractor and trailer.
Yeah.
Finds a coffin and it's him.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting when I saw that.
So you have to wonder, you know, is this Batman Who Laughs is bringing people from in the multiverse?
Yeah.
Are we seeing different Bruce Waynes from the multiverse? Because we see two different versions of a dark Batman in this particular issue.
Yeah, the other one is called the Grim Knight.
The Grim Knight. He's actually what you would think if the Batman actually became sort of a Punisher-like character.
Yeah, right. That's what I was thinking, too. He's kind of like the Punisher. He's, like, super grim and dark, and he's got guns all over the place, and he just...
He's got guns tied all over the place. And he's got knives, and he's killing guards there at Arkham with knives and all kinds of things.
He's just mowing these people down. How did you like Batman in disguise? He's the master of disguise, right?
Yeah.
You see him taking on the disguise of the medical examiner there, too. I thought that was really cool. I love
yeah,
to
that,
see
that.
Yeah,
that was cool.
You know me. My history is from, you know, the animated series because growing up watching that, right? And all throughout that series, he always would be in disguise. He would always take on disguises and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, when I saw this, I was like, oh man, this is so awesome. I love this.
And I guess his biggest, most famous, most popular one is Matches Malone. And it's always nice to see Matches Malone. We actually haven't seen Matches Malone in a while.
Yeah, quite some time.
But the one moment that we get actually is from one of Batman's rogues gallery, and we get Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
And he actually thinks this is the real Batman that's coming through Arkham killing people, and he says, this isn't you.
Yeah, Batman, we are foes, but this isn't you.
So he can tell that he's snapping necks, and he'll do the old boot to the face, but not the, you know, knife to the skull and yeah, the forehead and different things.
See, right.
This
right.
guy is a real cold-blooded killer.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. And then he's, you know, you see them kick in the door there to Joker's cell, and you know, and he just kind of opens the door for the Batman Who Laughs. And I got to tell you, this page was really cool, dude. You know, you see him in the doorway, his silhouette, and all you can see is him holding, you know, his weapons, bloody and chains, and this big, huge, creepy Joker-esque smile.
Oh, that's awesome. The artwork in here is awesome.
This is amazing. They did a really good job on the artwork and the colors. It was on point. I gotta tell you, dude, I am a fan of Scott Snyder. The first time I ever heard of Scott Snyder is when I just started getting into comic books again. And it was with his horror book, what is it called? Witches. That's one of my favorite books that he's done, dude. I was really excited.
Yeah,
I
love that.
Yeah, have you read that one?
Oh, yeah.
So I love that, and it's a horror book, and he's really good with horror books. And when I heard he was doing Batman, I was like, this is awesome. I love this stuff. And he's done some of the greatest Batman stuff out there, right? It's kind of changed. Anytime that he does anything like this, it changes the whole, flips the Batman universe upside down on its head, right?
Well, I guess that would be a very debatable thing, but there are some stories that he's done that's very iconic.
There you go. That's the word.
At least to me, the Court of Owls, you know, the first, I don't know how many issues of that new 52 Batman run.
Uh-huh. Court of Owls is great.
That is totally awesome.
And then you got that, the Joker who,
Oh, Joe Fixit. Yeah. And it led into Death of the Family, not Death in the Family, but Death of the Family.
Yes, correct. So that's pretty iconic as well, right?
I guess. I mean, I enjoyed it. I know there's a lot of people that did not enjoy the new 52, and you go into Zero Hour into
I love that stuff,
some other stuff, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it myself. This is kind of one of those things, you know, this what they're doing now with the metal and stuff, they're kind of flipping it on its head again, and it's one of those iconic things again. You know, a lot of people don't like it as much either, but you know, for what it is, I'm one of those people who likes it. I didn't really get to read too much of anything metal because there were so many tie-ins. It was just really hard to keep up. You know, I collected a handful of them, but I couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah, there was a bunch of tie-ins.
So many.
The story, you know, he reminds me a little bit of Grant Morrison because some of his stuff, you read it and it's almost you have to let it sink in and read it again because some of it's not the easiest to digest.
Okay.
But some of it is pretty straightforward. But like his Justice League, you could ask me what the singularity is that's in the Justice League, and I have no clue what that is or what it means.
That one I couldn't really get a grasp on myself. But this Batman Who Laughs, I mean, I love this issue. This issue was really good. And by the time that this episode comes out, number two would be already out, and number three possibly. This one's so good. And if you guys, there's something that you guys want to jump on. If you guys did not like metal and you guys are not into that one, pick this one up at least. Give this one a little bit of a benefit of the doubt and check it out. Check out number two and three when they come out. And I got to tell you guys, this is awesome. I love these panels. I love this artwork.
The one thing that I really like to see out of this book, if they go into the character of this Batman Who Laughs a little more to see what his, you know, his motivations are and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
Because you don't really know too much about, I mean, he really hasn't been around too long. So that would be very interesting. And I love the scene where he's explaining to Jim Gordon exactly about his theory about, you know, this toxin that was in Joker's heart when his heart stops beating, that the person who kills him is going to get infected with a Joker toxin.
Yeah, and I gotta tell you, those panels are awesome, man, with the red in the background, and it's raining, and they're just on top of the roof. So cool.
If you never read anything that Jock's done before, it's great. It's great. He did some Green Arrow.
So, we gotta talk about these last couple of pages here. After Batman's kind of talking to Gordon there, and he stops and he goes and does some detective work, and he finally remembers, he's like, I know where he is. And you see him kind of flying in the Batcave to Alfred, and he's, you know, telling him, you know, undo the waterway security systems, you know, and he's like, well, if I do that, you know what's gonna happen. He's like, just do it, you know what I mean? And then you start to see a figure in the water kind of drifting down into the Batcave. And who is it?
It's the Joker, of course.
Right?
I sort of have a theory about this.
Okay, what is it?
If you think about it, you know, the Batman who laughs wants to kill the Joker.
Okay.
And if you're the Joker, and you know somebody's coming after you,
uh-huh,
where would you go? Who do you know that would protect you, no matter what?
Batman.
Even though he's like your biggest nemesis.
Yeah.
You know what? He goes to Batman. It's guaranteed that he's going to protect him.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. You know, when I was reading it, I didn't get that.
And he really thinks, and then this next scene is pretty shocking.
Oh, yeah. This is the big one here. He comes out of the water, pulls out a gun, points it at Batman. And Batman's like, hey, you know, what are you doing? You don't have to do this. We need to work together. And before he can even get those sentences out, Joker shoots the gun, but it's a joke gun, and it shoots backwards straight into himself. And what did you think when you saw that the first time?
I was thinking, what is he doing? Really? But then he kind of explains it after that the only way to beat him is to become him.
Yeah.
Meaning the Batman who laughs, who's a Joker-ized Batman, has become a Joker-ized Batman yourself. Wouldn't it be easier to bring some, you know, Joker toxin along with you and just, hey, we'll inject you, Batman, I don't have to shoot myself.
Right. Just spray him or something with it. You know, how many times has Batman gotten sprayed by Joker toxin? But, you know, that's the thing. This toxin that is supposed to be in his heart is this, like, super concentrated, I think they call it, like, nanotoxin or whatever. And they even say, you know, I could probably inject myself with all of this antitoxin that we have to, you know, counteract this toxin. I don't think any of that would work, even if I took it all. So, I think that's probably one of the reasons of why Joker did it the way he did, because he's got this super concentrated toxin running through his body.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
I love that last panel too. You see Batman there, and he's trying to be serious, and he's talking to Alfred, and he says, I love the way it says here, he says, Alfred, he's calling to me, but all I can hear, and then he starts laughing. Laughing just like the Joker would. And you see, you know, him hanging over the Joker, and he's just getting this Joker-esque grin to his face. And it's just, I love that last page there. It was amazing.
And the Joker's dead, never to come back.
So
Joker's
we think.
Joker's gone. No more three Jokers. It'll be the two Jokers.
Joker's done. No more.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, this was really interesting. I read the book, and at first I was kind of reluctant because obviously, you know, Metal was just so crazy. There were so many tie-ins. I mean, it was good. I liked it because, you know, it was one of those iconic things where it flipped the whole universe upside down. There was new heroes that came out of it and things of that nature. But I was also reluctant just because I was like, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to saturate this whole universe with another crazy theory? But then I read it and I got to that ending page and I was like, wow, this was actually really good. And I read it a handful more times. And the more that I read it, the more that I liked it.
Yeah, and coming out of Metal, I didn't know if I heard that they were doing this miniseries, and I didn't know how interested I was in it.
Uh-huh.
Coming out of Metal, because Metal wasn't the best thing I've ever read.
Okay.
It wasn't the worst either, but there wasn't anything that caught me about it. But now that I read this issue, I'm very interested to see what happened next. I'm very interested to see if he delves into these characters a little bit more. And where the story is going.
Yeah, after reading this book, I'm right there with you. I didn't read too much of the Metal, and you probably read more than I have, but After reading this issue, I think I'm really interested in kind of going back and reading Metal and kind of getting more of the story than what I do have.
Yep, I'm looking forward to the next issue.
Yeah, next issue should be good. They're also doing, they're coming out with a Grim Knight arc, or his own issue, I believe he's
one
coming
shot.
Out. Is it just a one shot?
Yeah.
Cool, that's going to be interesting.
How do you like the comedy in this issue?
What do you mean?
I mean, are there insurance policies for Batman?
Oh man, that was so cheesy.
And then Batman was like, yeah, the Batman insurance policies are called Dark Knight Returns.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I could have probably done without that.
But no, you see why Alfred is around, because he's chasing this tractor and trailer with these little trailers that they're hauling, you know, well, they're hauling Bruce Wayne's body in, but
yeah,
he has him scan it to see if he can, you know, ride right through it.
Right.
Without injuring himself. So it's pretty interesting how they work together.
Yeah. 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 I've always had this thought that, you know, Batman is not the only one that is Batman. You know, Alfred is definitely a part of Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I mean, he's part of the team. And I do like when those two cars crash together and he shoots out something from, it looks like his bike that he's on.
Yeah.
And the cables hit the cars and they're like hanging over the side of the bridge and he saved the people that way.
Yeah, that was cool.
I don't know
cool.
how they're getting out. But
who's going to help them? They're just hanging there still.
So let's go ahead and head to Stump the co-host.
Welcome to the Batpod Stump Your Co-host segment. Listen while Bill tries to stump his co-host. Can he do it? Let's wait and find out.
Welcome to Stump the Co-host, and today on Stump the Co-host, of course, we have Joey. How's it going?
Pretty good. I'm ready. Let's get it going.
Are you ready to be stumped?
I'm ready to win.
You got your Batman card in hand. You're not ready to give it up yet?
Yes, but if I lose, you don't know if I have Joker toxin in my heart.
I see. Pretty lame, but Anyway, we have a theme today, and the theme is animals.
Okay.
You pretty familiar about all the animals that Batman's been involved with?
No. So I'm probably going to lose.
Okay, first question. Which one of these animals does not belong? So I have four animals.
Okay.
That have been with Batman or in Batman comics. One is a fake. You have to identify the fake.
All right.
So, A, Ace the Bat Hound. B, Bat Cow. C, Mogo the Bat Ape. And D, Benny the Bat. Do you want me to repeat those for you?
Gosh. Please, just for comedic purposes.
Okay. A, Ace the Bat Hound. B, Bat Cow. C, Mogo the Bat Ape. And D, Benny the Bat.
Oh man, that's hilarious. Okay, I know Ace the Bat Hound is real, so that one's good. Now, okay. I want to say, this one's too funny. I want to say Bat Cow, but I'm almost kind of, I almost want to say the bat one is not real. So it's in between. I'm going between B and D.
So which is it?
D. Let's go with D.
So you think Benny the Bat is a fake?
I think Benny the Bat is fake.
Okay. You would be correct.
Yes.
Benny the Bat is a fake.
Dude, really? Is there really a Bat Cow?
Yeah, and it wasn't that long ago. It was from It was Damien's Bat Cow.
Oh,
he was in the Bat Cave.
Okay, all right. You know, I did not read that run. I started to, and then I never picked it back up again.
And Mogo the Bat Ape was from Batman 114 from 1958.
That's funny. Cool.
Are you ready for your second question?
Yes, let's get it going.
What is the first appearance of Ace the Bat Hound? A. Detective Comics 231. B. Batman number 92, volume 1. C. Brave and the Bold 112. Or D. Action Comics 155.
Ooh, that's a hard one. Okay, because I don't know much about Ace the Bat Hound.
Oh, come on.
I'm going to say D, Action.
Action Comics 155, final answer.
That is my... Do I get a lifeline?
No.
Then yes, that's my final answer.
You would be incorrect.
Oh, man.
The first appearance of Ace the Bat Hound was in Batman number 92 from June 1955.
That was my first instinct. I should have went with it.
I'm sorry, but you did not win the cash and prizes this week. But would you like to know what you would have won?
Yes.
You would have won your very own Bat Cow. Yes. You would never have to go out for milk again. The only problem is you, because this cow stays in the house, not outside the house. He's home. Yes, the only thing you have to be careful with the Bat Cow is those bat-shaped cow patties.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for them. The wife might not like, them in the living room, on the stairs.
Nope. But I hear cow patties are good to start a fire.
Oh, is that right? Well, you didn't win it. Your bat card is slowly slipping away. You haven't got one of these right in a while, so
no,
you
I haven't.
Step up your game.
Man, I have but I have gotten at least one or two each time, right, so.
Yeah, one or two. We add them all together, and you're like at, 35% correct?
I think I would probably say a little bit more than that, but all right, we'll go with it.
So let's head back to the books. Our next book is Detective Comics 996. Your writer is Peter Tomasi. Your penciler is Doug Monkey. Your inker is Jamie Mendoza and Mark Irwin. Your colorist, David Barron. Your variant cover, Brian Stelfleas. Your associate editor, Dave Welgos. And your editor, Chris Conroy. And this issue, after Batman's friendly visit to Arkham Asylum, he meets up with Damian and they discuss who do they think is behind the personal attacks against Batman. Batman decides to track down Henry Ducard and his old sensei, Kenji, who are both attacked by a mutated monster that has a face of all his foes. And in the end, he comes up with another trainer of Batman by the name of Thaddeus that looks sort of like Mr. Miracle. So, very interesting issue.
Yeah, if you want to say interesting. I mean, this book was good. It was just, it got a little weird. It was really interesting, but it got a little weird when you saw that weird creature.
Yeah, and that's the same creature that was in the first part of Peter Tomasi's run here.
Uh-huh.
But he looked a little different, and he was breathing like Joker toxin, if we recall.
Yeah.
The one that killed Leslie Tompkins.
Yeah, it almost looked like a lava monster or something.
Yeah, so he went to Arkham Asylum to try to get info out, of everybody in there, because he thought somebody's got to know something.
Yeah, he just beat everybody up.
Oh, I love this panel where, everybody's beat up. You have the Joker, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, the Ventriloquist, Solomon Grundy. I like what he said. You hurt Grundy, Grundy hurt you.
Yeah, he just beat them all up.
Two-Face, yeah. Mr. Zazz, yeah. So we actually see Damian again in this book.
Yeah, where's he been at?
And it seems like there's something going on between the two.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think this goes all the way back to Death of the Family.
Uh-huh.
It might be something else that I missed. I'm not quite sure, but you know, this initial run that Peter Tomasi did of Batman and Robin when the New 52 started.
Yeah.
That's when we last saw Deckard and his son. I don't know if you read.
And maybe that's what they're talking about. Maybe that's the weird thing going on between Batman and Robin here, where
I don't think so, because you know, a lot of things happened since then.
Yeah.
In that Batman and Robin book, that was one of the first arcs in that book, and a lot of things happened, and even him dying and being brought back. So I'm not quite sure, but seeing the card is kind of cool, you know, and this is a character that we've seen in Batman Begins.
Yeah, in the movies, yeah.
Yeah, they use the name Deckard.
That was pretty cool to see.
And this artwork again. This artwork is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I love this artwork. This was awesome. I love seeing... Here we go again. We see Batman in disguise again. And I love that. We got two books here.
Oh, yeah.
Batman in disguise. It's awesome. And I love that we're seeing that.
And we talk about Matches Malone, and there he is.
There you go. There's Matches Malone. Yeah. I love it, dude. I love seeing Batman, because that's what Batman does, right? He's a master of disguise. He's the world's greatest detective. And that's what we see here. We need Batman going back to the basics and I don't know if Batman can ever be basic, but we see him going back to being a detective and doing what he does best.
So tell me something. What is it with guys that want to sit on like a throne of skulls?
I was just looking at that. Yeah, what the heck is going on with that?
He's like homeless, basically. He has people, he knows somebody's after him, and he's like got his own little, I guess it's a wall of skulls.
Yeah. He's got a shrine of skulls. It's so weird, man. What is
this? If we think about what's happened in this book, we've got two perfect murders that are meant to look like the Waynes.
Yeah.
We got a creature that has breathed Joker venom or Joker toxin into Leslie Tompkins, and she ends up dying. And we have a Zorro come to the front door of Wayne Manor and stabs Alfred.
Yeah.
Meaning Zorro, that's the movie that they went to when the Waynes were killed. It's all kind of connected to, you know, him being Batman. Whoever this villain is, whoever's behind all this, knows that he's Batman. We get here, we get people that have trained Batman that are being killed.
Yeah, and he says here,
at least attempted.
And he says here, people in my life who made me Batman are being unmade.
And it would seem like a pretty straightforward crime kind of story type of thing. Then you throw in this mutated monster. I don't know what to say about that.
You don't know what the heck this book is doing. Where are they going with this? Yeah, I was pretty excited to see Tomasi on this coming out here. And now I'm sitting back thinking, okay, what the heck is going on? What? This is really weird. You got all these different things in play, and there is no way it's almost like throwing darts at a dartboard, and it's not hitting anything near the dartboard. And it's just these theories, these different things coming at us, and it just feels so random. And where is this book going?
And I just wonder, one of the things that he did after he come from Arkham, he did say that his villains were too scared to mention anything. Like, they knew something, but they were too scared to mention anything, which is kind of odd. You have to wonder, did they use some kind of DNA or blood or something to make up this monster? Because it has the look and everything, and Catwoman is even saying, marry me.
Yeah.
Well, the one, it has the Joker laugh. It says, Nora so cold, from Mr. Freeze.
Uh-huh.
And then it says, marry me. And then Bane saying, break you.
Yeah. Which makes you think, the only person that I think would be connected to something like this type of monster type of thing, is Hugo Strange. But I don't know if that's, you know, that's the obvious, you know, answer, but is that what's going to happen?
Well, he does know Batman's identity, but would he go to these lengths to, you know, do this?
Uh-huh. I don't know. That's pretty interesting. I am intrigued. It just did get a little weird, but I'm definitely intrigued into where this is going to be going.
Absolutely. And one of my favorite scenes, and you don't see this enough, where Batman actually uses his gauntlets on his gloves.
Okay. Yeah.
He's using it to climb that mountain made of ice.
Yeah, this was pretty cool.
I love seeing that. You don't see that enough. You'd see that in the movies, you know, with his fighting and he uses the gauntlets, you know, to block like a sword or something like that. But this was pretty unique. And it was just in one panel where you basically see it, but I thought that was neat to add that in.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I love seeing, you know, a little bit of his little ninja background too. It was really cool.
Yeah. And this book kind of ends, as I said, that guy looks like Mr. Miracle.
Yeah, a whole lot.
His name's Thaddeus. I don't know. They're on some kind of... What are they standing on? The guy looks like he's chained to something, and it kind of tilts the whole...
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. You can't really tell. It looks like some kind of platform kind of thing.
Yeah, you really can't tell what's going on there.
Yeah, yeah. And it does say at the end there, it says, "Next, Miracle Man," so...
So I did look up to see if this Thaddeus, there was a Thaddeus that might have trained Bruce or something like that, but I got no hits on that whatsoever, so I'm not quite sure who he is.
Yeah, that's
possibly is a new character.
But why does he look so much like Mr. Miracle?
Yeah, that's weird.
And why is the next thing it says Miracle Man?
I don't know. It'll be interesting. I do have to say this book is going into directions that are not expected.
Yeah, that's definitely throwing us off.
It's probably my top Batman book for sure.
Okay. Even though that you're just pulling us all over the place?
Yeah. It has me at least intrigued for the next issue. I want to read it as soon as it comes out just to see where this is going.
Okay, cool. Cool. Yeah, it's a good book. I love the artwork. I love the dialogue. I love what Tomasi's doing on this. It has just got me a little wondering, where the heck are you going? There was so much coming at me. I can't grasp anything, but I am definitely on board.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it should be really good.
I know it's going up through he did say, I thought I saw him on Twitter say that he already just turned in a script for 1004, so he's going to be on after 1000, definitely. So
cool. I'm excited about that.
So let's go ahead and we will head to Character Spotlight.
All right, for this week's Character Spotlight, I chose The Batman Who Laughs. This is actually fairly new. Did you know how when this guy first showed up on the scene, Bill?
Well, I know he showed up on the scene during Dark Knight's Metal.
Yeah, he did. So let's kind of jump right into this. His first appearance was in Dark Days, the casting number one in June of 2017. And he was obviously created by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo as a part of the storyline in Dark Knight's Metal. He is the Batman of Earth 22, and he was drugged and captured by the Joker, who destroyed Gotham City, and the Joker killed Batman's entire rogues gallery, and that he also murdered Jim Gordon.
On his world.
Yes, in Earth 22. This is not Earth Prime, it's Earth 22.
Right.
Yeah, he also blew up the city, rigging bombs throughout various buildings. Joker forced an incapacitated Batman to watch as he began murdering adults in front of their children, and if that wasn't enough, he Jokerized all the orphan children and set them loose on the city. Batman eventually managed to break free. In a murderous rage, he brutally beat the Joker, snapping his neck and killing him. Days later, Batman explained to Superman that the Joker was dying from the chemicals that transformed him many years ago. And although Joker succeeded in making him break his one rule, Batman refused to let that turn him into a monster. With the GCPD and Arkham Asylum in ruins, Superman had the Jokerized children quarantined at Star Labs while Batman returned to the Batcave to begin running some tests. Batman later revealed that he was exposed to a new strain of nanotoxin that had been inside Joker's heart and was rigged to be released when the Joker was killed. The toxin slowly rewrote Bruce's mind to become more like the Joker's, which led the Bat family to deduce that they were training to fight Batman. So, I guess Batman brought everybody from, you know, the Bat family into the Batcave, and he was training them with, you know, all kinds of robots and stuff like that in the Batcave. He was training them to fight himself when he became completely Jokerized, which was pretty interesting when I read about this.
Yeah, I don't remember this where, you know, he killed the Joker, and, you know, the toxin was in his heart. I just don't remember that the first time I read it, but it is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty. When I read this, I was like, dude, he killed the Joker. This is crazy. I can't believe this happened. Batman claimed that the real reason he brought everybody into the cave was so that they could be the first one to stop him when he changed into the Jokerized Batman. He suddenly pulled out a pair of rifles and shot all the Bat family dead. Batman killed the entire Justice League aboard the Watchtower, leaving Superman alive too. Man, this is crazy. He gets Jokerized and he just starts killing everybody off.
Yeah. That's nuts.
I couldn't believe this when I read this. I was like, man, then while I'm reading this and while I'm researching this stuff, because like I said before, I didn't really read too much of the Dark Knight's Metal. And now that I'm researching this stuff, I'm super, super interested in reading it. I might go back and read it now.
I mean, you got to think, how many villains are there that is a version of yourself? That has been, you know, it's a version of yourself, but it is also a version of your arch enemy also.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
It's got to be crazy. And to sit there and think that you're fighting off yourself a little bit because, you know, you're Batman and you have this moral code, right? And you become Jokerized and your moral code is fighting with this toxin that's inside you now. And you're just kind of going absolutely nuts very slowly. I thought that was really interesting. Later, he exposed Superman to Black Kryptonite, claiming to have done the same thing to Supergirl. This caused him and his son, John, to kill Lois Lane in a berserk state before dying themselves as a part of the side effects. Again, this is absolutely crazy. Eventually, the world fell to Batman, bringing down all manner of opposing forces from armies to gods. Bruce believed he could not sink any lower until he met Barbados, who showed him the nature of the dark multiverse. Batman was tasked by Barbados to locate his counterparts on other Earths to form a group of Dark Knights, which he led as the Batman Who Laughs. That is his quick little origin here. Now, in Dark Knight's Metal, the Batman Who Laughs appears when Barbados sends him to bring the Red Death to Earth 52 as a member of the Dark Knights. After Barbados and the Dark Knights arrive on Prime Earth, thanks to the Court of Owls, the Batman Who Laughs takes control of Gotham and rules over it from Challenger's Mountain. Superman tries to fight the Dark Knights, but is unable to defeat them. So Superman tries to fight the Dark Knights, but is unable to defeat them due to the Dark Knights consisting of dark matter and making his punches ineffective. For Superman's punches to be ineffective, think about how crazy that is.
Yeah, that's nuts.
The Flash is able to save Superman before the Destroyer can kill him, and they escape the Dark Knights by going through a portal. Eventually, the Dark Knights successfully capture all members of the Justice League and take them to Champions Mountain in Gotham City, where Barbados resides. Cyborg gains a multiversal upgrade from the Mother Box built within him and uses it to free the Leaguers before transporting them all to Hypertime. The Justice League reemerged and split up in an attempt to find Nth Metal, which is deadly to those from the Dark Multiverse. Unfortunately, the Dark Knights had expected this and used the heroes to locate the metal before ambushing them. The Batman Who Laughs attacks Wonder Woman at the Rock of Eternity after she found Hawkman's Nth Metal mace. Prime Earth Batman and Joker team up to fight the Batman Who Laughs, and he manages to escape Prime Earth. And then that leaves us here with what's going on in the Batman Who Laughs number one. And we just spoke about that a little bit, which is very interesting. And there's so much more into this. I had to just touch on these things just a little bit. And I actually had to figure out what parts to kind of talk about because there was so much. You got to go into depth with a lot of this stuff. And I just barely touched on the little tip of the iceberg on each of these things that I spoke on because there's so much more depth into this. And it's really interesting to talk about and check out. And it's just not even a year old with this stuff. And it was really interesting to research. It was pretty cool.
No, and the one thing that I remember reading was in the Justice League here, not too long ago, he appeared in an issue that the Legion of Doom was featured.
Yes.
And he was like locked in the Legion of Doom's basement, which they let him out, and like some of the other villains were like, hey, that's not somebody you want to leave out. So,
right.
That's very cool.
And then that's when all this stuff happens from the Batman Who Laughs number one. He starts killing off all these Bruce Waynes from all the multiverse and all this crazy stuff. So it's a pretty interesting take on the Batman mythos.
Yeah. Very good. Nice job.
Thanks to the internet. Hey, how you guys doing? This is Joey Galvez here, co-host of the Batpod. Have you ever wanted to be a part of the Batpod? Well, now you can. You can reach us at batpodpodcast@gmail.com, or you can call us. Leave a voicemail at 410-449-0650. That number again is 410-449-0650. Call us or email us. Be a part of the Batpod. Come on, I dare ya. We have Twitter. You can tweet the show at PodBat, Bill at Gotham Knight 13, and you can tweet myself at Joey Galvez 84.
We really just wanted to give a quick shout out to check out all these great podcasts on the nerdylegion.com.
They have some really great stuff over there. There's some awesome stuff already there. This has been fun being a part of the network. It's been fun hanging out with Bill and, talking with you guys and hanging out, having some fun.
And I just wanted to thank everybody that has liked our episode tweets and retweeted our episode. We really appreciate it. And get those iTunes reviews out. We'll go ahead and end it here. But yeah, we had some good issues here.
Yeah, it was definitely fun. I really liked each issue we spoke about. I think my pick of the night would be... I think I'm going to have to pick the Batman Who Laughs number one. I think that was my favorite of all three.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Mine would probably be Detective. Since okay, I really cool. don't know or can explain what happened in Batman very well. So, yeah, but we had some good issues here.
Yeah. I think I got to step up my game for that trivia, man.
Yeah, well, you know, you do what you have to do. You want to keep that Batman card. So, yeah, so we'll be back here in 2 weeks talk about some more Bat books. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
I think that's it. Hope you guys have a good night.
Until next time, same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.